Malia, are we good?
Yes, we're good.
Thank you.
All right, let's get started. Coffee Day. This is the Guam EPA Board of Directors regular meeting. Today's date is February 19, 2026. The approximate time is 4 o'clock p.m. We'll go around the room. Stephen Carbolito.
Stephen Carrara.
Brian Castro.
Heather Kittigua.
Steve Hollister.
Kathleen Moreland.
Thank you. Seeing we have quorum, public notices went out. Let's get this meeting started. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next item, approval of last month's meeting minutes.
I read them.
I read them.
Yeah. Seemed like I rambled a lot.
Arlene makes us sound better than we usually were.
Move to approve.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Anyone need more time? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion passes. Next one, board discussion and action, GSWA request for reimbursement first quarter fiscal year 2026. Arlene, we have Mr. Irvin on the phone. Hello.
Hi, yes. How are you?
Good. Do you want to just quickly brief what we have in front of us?
Sure. This is the quarterly request for reimbursement. I think we've documented the expenditures that we had last quarter in the various categories, and the vendor, predominantly Pyramid with electronics and white goods, and then South Pacific with HHW.
Thank you. Does anyone have questions? I'm just trying to pull up the board pack here. Because you sent the law, right, Arlene?
It's there.
It's there, it's attached.
Yeah, attached to their request. Right there in front of you. Right there. Right there, Chairman, you just passed it. Right there.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're here because the law says the agency is authorized to annually reimburse GSWA up to $400,000 in accordance with the Guam Zero Waste Master Plan. GSWA shall submit a proposal including total cost to the administrator and board for approval. Honestly, the length of reading of that is, it's always, it just doesn't, it's not super clear because it says submit a proposal, but then it says include costs. So is it an upfront proposal or is it an after the fact cost expended?
After
it. It looks like it's already been done.
Yeah. Right.
So they're seeking reimbursement.
Yeah.
Is this the first one?
Yes.
So
first
got
one.
Yes.
Does anyone have any
reservations? I just have a question.
Yeah.
I mean, is the $400,000 the total cost of the program or just the amount reimbursed? Because $400,000 seems kind of
just
light for the to do all that stuff.
No, the cost of the total year is over $1 million for the white goods, etc. White goods, we're the success of having people drop off their white goods at any of our transfer station has been pretty robust. In fact, we have to up the program amount to $340,000. So the total HHW and metal recycling is well over $1 million.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
That's well over $1 million, but only $400,000.
Gets reimbursed from us, yes.
So we just have to approve their proposal.
Yes.
All right, I move that we approve the proposal as provided in the January 14th, 2026 letter from Long Solid Waste. I'll second it.
Thank you. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion passes. Next, we have the administrator's report.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Personnel, we have 53 full-time employees as of today. But as of Monday, we will have 62 as we have one biologist resigning as of tomorrow afternoon. We have the public information officer interviews completed. The environmental technician is still on a continuous listing with DOA. The environmental health specialist interviews were completed. Four were selected, one selectee declined, and then one selectee actually was determined not to have rights to work in the U.S. So we will have to recruit two more environmental health specialists from a supplemental list that we've already requested from DOA. Agency headquarters, we still have ongoing discussions with Kunimoto for the design. The AME firm has 6 months to provide design for the new building, so that comes into July of 2026. Okay. Yeah. We still have the 2 million tires. We're working on an IFB for the removal and disposal. We did get a an estimate of about $4 million to get rid of those tires. So we'll work on the IFB for that. The public hearing on the proposed on-site wastewater treatment and disposal system, which is the Type 4 system. We did pick up an approval memo from the AG's office on February 6th, but there was issue with the wording of that memo, as the wording was recommended for approval. But I think the AAA process, if I'm not mistaken, Kristen, is that the AEL requires that it says approval, not recommended for approval.
Right, yeah, they had, if I could clarify, yeah they did tell us, oh, come pick it up, and what we had was like a memo from someone that was like, oh, we're recommending these, and we said, no, we need the AG to actually approve them before we can move on to the next step. So, and the last that I had heard was it was being routed for his approval, but that was last week.
It was like the 3rd or 6th of February. No, the 8th of February.
And so we're still waiting on an update.
Thank you, Kristen. So part of the criticism that we got was not being, I guess, transparent enough with the updates for DLDRN. So we are working with Mayor Lizama of GIGO, and we will have a town hall meeting on February 25th, which is next week, Wednesday, to update the residents in that area. Let's see. We are still working with US EPA and Joint Region Marianas on the investigation plan for the source of DLDRN. So that's still due on February 26th, but we meet weekly, or Captain DeGrange weekly with them.
If I can jump in, we talk every couple of days, pretty much. The agreement is not that they'll have their final sampling plan by the 27th, but rather a scoping assessment, basically. They came and met with us, I guess mostly Peter and I, and we walked them through all the data that we had used to basically substantiate the request letter in the first place, and they said, oh, that does look interesting. So, you know, we made a couple of suggestions for some sampling that they could start with, just shared some information back and forth. They have also sent me the closeout report for the housing units 1 through 3. I have 4 through 6, and the others are still in closeout. They're still working on that report. So that's basically all the current data that they have. So we'll have a better idea about what initial scope of sampling they're going to conduct. Some of it will actually be outside the back gate of Anderson, because they identified that area near Y-15 as being federal property. So even though it's outside the gate, it's still federal property. So that will be included, and that is part of the permitting process now for UICs. So we should have some data, hopefully, in the relatively near future. Yeah.
And we'll have an update in the March's meeting.
I'll send one, because I'll be so excited.
So we are still also working with Public Health and ATSDR, but ATSDR responded by requesting for additional data that we may have, which is the drinking water exposures, the crop exposures, and the fish and shellfish consumption exposures. So you can read that. But that's the data that they want, as far back as we can provide. I'll hold off on the Palisades NOV because it's later in our agenda. Abandoned vehicles, when you approve the $2 million to go to DPW, so they are they already have the funds in their account, and they are looking to issue an RFP for their for a contractor to do the abandoned and junk vehicle removal and disposal.
Do we know how close they are to that RFP, issuing that RFP?
I think they're still just working on it to issue it out.
So okay.
I don't think they issued the RFP out there.
All right, let's keep track of that, because when we had our special meeting, that was urgent, right?
Yeah.
That we pass it so they could issue their RFP.
Yes.
So now
yes.
we're going to track them to make sure it's issued, because people really want a solution to that issue on island.
Yes. And I think they're also in communication with the mayor, because even though the mayor is not doing the island-wide cleanup program, they're still facilitating complaints about junk vehicles.
Sure.
Can I just ask you, there's kind of a related thing that, I mean, it seems as though there are a lot of unlicensed, unpermitted car repair entities that people are just running on their properties. And then they have all of these junky cars. Some may be working, some are not working. But it's also, I know, but it's like, it's creating, you know, also an environmental issue for those locations as well. And I think it would be great if we could kind of look into that also at some point. Because, I mean, I drive around and I just see these places and it's just like, wow, you know, pests, all the fluids leaking. So I don't know if there are ways to kind of enforce any regulations about this, or to try and get people to actually comply. Like, I'm sure they don't have business licenses to do these things.
So there's certain things that, you know, that households are allowed to do without permits, provided there's no complaints. And for some of the complaints that we've investigated where they're calling in because there's an unlicensed auto repair shop next door, what we're finding is that some of these people, they have vendor licenses to go and provide a service to you at your house, but they're taking it to their homes, and, you know, basically they have a waiting list of people who want their cars repaired, and we kind of remind them that this is not the right zone for it, it's not, you're not licensed to do it, but we can't say you can't operate on it, because that's, it's DPW who's enforcing zones for land management. So it's a zoning issue. It might be a business license issue, but if there's any solid waste type violations or hazardous waste type violations, we recommend that they, you know, they cover their vehicles, they park it on their property outside of the easement, because it becomes a public safety for emergency responders who are transiting down that roadway. An example would be like Laddie Heights. It's a two-way road. But then people park on the easement, and they park their, you know, vehicles that are not operating, or their boats and stuff like that, and turn into a one-way. And I'm surprised that, you know, the emergency responders are not making an issue with that, because it is a big issue until somebody dies or gets into an accident, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of visibility. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of agencies that also need to be involved in that discussion, quiet, and maybe that's something that we can do, you know, a task force, because we're in the task force for abandoned vehicles, and that won't fall necessarily under abandoned vehicles, because it's somebody's
right,
property
right.
that they're trying to repair, they're trying to fix, or maybe it's a business that's accumulating more than they should in a
right.
residential R1 zone.
Right, because, I mean, a lot of the ills, if you will, of having abandoned vehicles are present with these, you know, illegal car repair places, right? It's the same kinds of issues in terms of leaking fluids, rust, attracting pests, all these other kinds of things as well. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we need better legislation. Maybe we need to be chatting with somebody about that to kind of get control over it. But, you know, when you drive around, I mean, it seems like it's a real problem. And in some villages, probably, you know, maybe it's not as much, and other villages maybe it's a lot, but I think from the environmental perspective, I think we really have to look at that, because it's just getting worse.
Maybe
I think.
Should bring it up to the on it.
Yeah, so there is, I mean, when we were working with the senator to make the revisions to junk vehicles, abandoned vehicles, and it was actually Glenn who brought up the point that, you know, junk and treasure
right.
in the eyes of
yes.
the owner are two different things, right?
Right?
So there's still value seen in that car, because it's for parts, you know, it's not necessarily junk to the person who owns it, but like, oh, well, there's still useful parts. It's not
sure.
junk to me, while others can see, you know, a stripped car and, you know, so it's the value that the owner places in that vehicle that determines whether it's junk or a resource.
Right, but I think there's a difference between having, like, just a junky vehicle on your property, on your, you know, one unit household property, versus having 47 cars,
right?
Some of which are operable, some are not, some are leaking oil and other fluid, you know, antifreeze, who knows? So I think there's a difference, and I have a hard time believing that we don't have appropriate regulations to address this kind of thing, but it does seem that, you know, we're working so hard to deal with the junk abandoned vehicles. You know, I think we've got to think a little bit longer term as well, that how do we even manage the things that are kind of ongoing as well. I mean, I agree, you know, some, you know, one person's treasure is another person's
yeah.
trash, but at the same time, 47 vehicles on your property when in a residential neighborhood across the street from a school, you know, or near drinking water, I mean, it's really not a good idea, I don't think. It doesn't seem healthy,
yeah.
So anyway.
Absolutely.
Legislation. It's,
yeah,
you
that's
said
a little
it earlier.
Stronger.
What has to be done is there.
Yeah.
How do you limit ownership?
Have every car you own, you have to have it registered. If it doesn't move,
yeah.
you still don't register it.
Well, that's
got one
the working group, that was one of the things that I had mentioned, is that you can, and it might be an opportunity as well, right? So at registration of the vehicle, you have to register your vehicle in order for it to be driven on the road. Maybe if we put a twist on it by saying that if your vehicle is not operable, you have to register it to get it registered, and then you still pay that disposal
mm-hmm.
fee, because really the disposal fee is for that year. Every year you have to register.
Right.
So when an inspector comes over to your property and says, are these vehicles registered? Yes, it's registered, showing that there's, you know, that it's still use on it, right? And then it's accounted for. So, you know, it's. I think it's about accountability, but at the same time, I think land management via DPW should enforce zoning.
Right.
R1 is residential single dwelling units, not a, you know, not five and six. It's not a parking garage. It's not a junkyard. It's not a place to do mechanical and painting operations, but that's what you see out there.
Well, that's where it comes down. If people complain, then they go out
yes.
and say, this is not zoned
yeah.
for this, please
yeah.
get rid of some of this junk.
Right, and then there's the other issue too, which is that, I mean, you can register it, but it's still not going to prevent the oil from leaking into the ground or the antifreeze or whatever. And then the other issue is all of these junky vehicles that are not
kept on the property even, right? They're all over. It just sort of mushrooms and spreads all over. And as you pointed out, I mean, that's really a public health issue as well. If an ambulance can't get in or a fire truck because there are all these junky vehicles that aren't even operable, you know, it's a big problem. So I don't know. Maybe we need to figure out what's, you know, how to work with the other agencies or how to come up with stronger legislation. But it just seems as though, you know, we're working in one area, but this is going to still be an issue, and it's going to kind of undercut some of the good work that the agency is doing to really protect health of people. So anyway, that's my request, my little jihad today.
Well, glad you got that off your chest.
Just for
no more jihad.
I know. I've got a whole month to come up with the next one. Yeah.
So there are four of us that are scheduled to meet with the regional administrator the week of March 13th. But there are also four of us that will be attending a water directors meeting the week prior, and also a PFAS training in San Francisco.
Off-island?
Off-island, yeah. The RF audit for the RRF is still ongoing. Connie submitted continuous and annual reports from 2017 to 2025. So we're waiting on the results of their review.
So is the documents that were submitted like invoices and receipts?
No, they wanted just expenditures and any MOAs or MOUs that was tied to the grant and to the fund, and just making sure that they were all compliant with the law.
Are expenditures like, not like a bank statement, but like something that says like minus this,
expenditures
minus that,
from
minus
the
that.
System,
from
the system, and that's what was provided to them.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I was reminded. Are we complete with the audit of the Environmental Trust Fund?
We submitted whatever they had requested, but during our initial entrance meeting with them, it was the auditor, BJ Cruz himself, who said, kind of mentioned that it really wasn't us that they should be auditing, only because we don't get the full amount. There's only a portion of that we get, so that they were going to look into probably auditing revenue tax, because that's who received the bulk of the funds. Mm-hmm. But we did submit everything also.
But we have.
Yes. Okay. And we're just waiting for any updates.
So the Mariana Island Conservation Strategy, which is really a continued engagement with DOW, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and DOI, focused on you know, conservation and recovery for those threatened, endangered, or at-risk species, related to military mission activities. So they do have a draft, and it was sent to the governor for review.
And they briefed it last night at like midnight in D.C.
Let's see. The Gura Technical Assistance Workshop for the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief. So that is also ongoing. As you know, that's that $500 million that
mm-hmm.
the government of Guam received.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we also approached Gura, you know, because we still have a hard time hiring employees. So they, their board approved 10 of our positions.
Great.
So they will be Gura employees under a 5-year grant under this CDBG DR grant. So those positions include inspectors, engineers, if they can hire them, and then program coordinators. Again, for a total of 10 positions.
Detailed here.
Detailed
yeah.
here,
mm-hmm.
correct. For 5 years. Gura does. We can provide the position description. Yeah. But they hire, yeah, they're hired. So also in that fix and six, we are proposing or we are submitting a proposal for a hazardous waste disposal facility on the new property. So in addition to the new building, if they approve this project, then we will also build a hassle, like almost like a hassle wall.
It's a household hazardous waste for post-debris management. So in the past, during the post-cleanup, all the household hazardous waste is collected, and it's just placed in an area without any containment. It's not prepared correctly. So what we're hoping to do is to put in this grant so that we can have a 120-foot by 80-foot, it's kind of like very similar to the open air warehouse gyms that you see like in Barragán and places like that, to house the permanent household hazardous waste post cleanup site, so that in the event of a typhoon, it can go to that site. And of course, addressing some of the grant requirements for low and moderate income families in the area, targeting them as well.
And we're, that proposal is $1.5 million?
Yeah, we put in a proposed budget of $1.5 million. The mayor's actually spent like $800,000, maybe $50,000 on the actual construction of their facility. So just being conservative, because we want hardened parking lot areas, we want berms, we want oil water separators to address that type of waste stream that you know, seasonally happens.
So you house them, but you also eventually ship them out?
So this is again post, right? So in the post typhoon debris removal, US EPA comes in with their team, and then we basically stand it up, we manage it until we turn it over to US EPA, who then packages, separates packages, and then ships off. So I believe they spent like $5 million on the last typhoon on removing all the household hazardous waste that was generated during Myanmar. So that's what we want a hardened facility that would prevent any potential releases into the groundwater, because it's over the northern aquifer. And then at the same time, as a part of our proposal, we want it dual use, which means that on the off season, which is, you know, most of the time, that we could use it as a training facility for composting, for other pesticides training, for again the low L&M populations in the area.
Where do people bring it during the low season?
They bring it to the GSWA, Household Hazardous Waste Transfer Station. But because during the emergency events, there's a large volume that is generated, and they're not able to accommodate that volume.
But even after Mawar, it was like a lot of it were the solar panels, TVs that were included in that household hazardous waste category. So a lot of those solar panels were a big bulk. And then like the gas cylinder tanks. We don't know why those became household. The propane tanks. So we had a lot of those during the
because they were at somebody's house. Household.
Well, you know, it's supposed to be typhoon related, so it blew into my mind.
And then as you can see, director's inspection activity, so 289 inspections across all of the programs for about a month, 3 weeks. And then the various building clearances, applications, and permits, 565 were issued. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Open it up for questions, comments.
I just remind me again the grant source for the new facility that doesn't have an end date on it, right?
That's a 5-year grant.
It's 5 years. Okay.
Yes. So we have received 4 years of that grant, which is $9 million, approximately $9 million for every year. You know, as you know, when the federal budget was initially passed, we were not going to get FY26, which is really comes at the beginning of FY27. So we were at we were in jeopardy of not receiving that 5th year. So when the deputy regional administrator met with us last week, she did say that if we can anticipate our federal allotment minus 3%.
Yeah.
To include that fifth year $9 million.
Mm-hmm.
But again, until we see it,
mm-hmm.
And until they see it, because they don't even have the funding yet in their
right.
in their accounts. So until they see it and they provide that allotment to us, you know, there is still a request under the general fund funding for $5.7 million
okay.
to Baldwin County.
Okay.
So when we met with the governor, we also asked that that not be eliminated from her budget until we actually see our federal funds, our federal allotment come in.
Right. Okay.
I was curious about more about the Gora block grant,
mm-hmm.
right? Going to get 10 positions. What would those people be doing?
So our permitting program, there's only two in the permitting program, and they're always swamped. As you can see, like the 565 permits that were issued. So maybe two or three of those employees will go directly to permitting to
mm-hmm.
help with that workload. And again, it depends on what they can hire. We can hire, so what they said is they're going to hire staff at the above SEP recruitment, whereas Guam UK, we always start at entry level, right? Above SEP recruitments always require a request to go down to DOA to be approved. But I think they've already, as an autonomous agency, they can hire at above staff. So again, depending on the kind of applicants or applications they receive for the positions that we requested for, program coordinators, inspectors, and engineers. So
okay.
We'll see what kind of application pool they get or applicant pool for those positions.
Do you have the ultimate authority on if they're actually hired or not? Or Gura does that? Okay.
I think they'll ask for our input.
Okay,
I don't know,
good.
But they,
yeah.
they are the hiring authority.
Right.
Ready to keep going?
Yep.
Okay, next one, status reports at administrative appeals.
I'm going to turn that over to Chris.
Yes, so we have, we still have our pre-hearing conference in the Palisades, the Tingan appeal, that's still scheduled for March 16th, We're waiting on that. So that's just going to be a pre-hearing conference. So we don't have any actual hearing dates scheduled in that one. And then with the other one for Mr. Coffendaffer, there is a hearing scheduled for Tuesday. So that's
the 24th.
The 24th. Yes.
That's the full like the actual
the hearing.
Hearing.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
What did he do? I'm sorry.
That's on well driller's license. So the agency, he applied for a well driller's license. The agency denied it, and so he's appealing that. And so again, the hearing on that is going to be next week on Tuesday.
So someone from the AG's office will be the hearing officer.
Correct. Right. Yes. In fact, the hearing will be taking place there at the AG's office.
Oh.
Hearing officer is Stacy Anderson?
Yes, sorry. And so for both of these, we did receive notice that that there's a new hearing officer assigned.
Okay. So for the board, there's two scenarios. It's already on Tuesday, and there's obviously a last-minute change in hearing officers. So the communication probably wasn't there, but it's... hearing officer alone hears it and forwards a recommendation to the board, or the board hears it and we determine it on a case-by-case basis. So if this happens as status quo, it would be the hearing officer hears it alone and then provides their memo to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we wanted, how we want to proceed?
What happened to the last hearing officer?
We received a notice that she was... I think last Friday was her last day at the AG's office, and so that's why these were reassigned.
for this one, I'm okay with the hearing officer hearing it on Tuesday as planned.
Do we need to take a vote on for her to hear it without us?
I don't think so. But
I know we passed that allowing her to do it alone. I don't know if it's who makes that. I don't recall.
Yeah.
Reenacted.
I think we will be voting on if we approve or reject or approve with comments their recommendation.
Arnon, do you have extra
for
these?
Yeah, well, you know, this way it maybe cuts off an appeal. If the guy doesn't like it, then he says, well, she went forward and heard it alone because the board wasn't there.
But you can take mine.
So I'd like to make a motion that the hearing officer hear the case alone and make the recommendation to the board.
Is that for Tuesday?
Kristen, isn't that what happens? Is the hearing officer hears?
As the chairman said, it could be it could be a hearing officer alone or a hearing officer with the board.
And they would all need to be there.
I just want to be really careful. I don't think it would be appropriate for me to advise the board about that. How any of that would go. But I believe that the law provides for the hearing officer to be able to advise the board regarding the hearings.
I guess the question is whether we would need a quorum if we were to hear. I imagine we would, right? To hear something.
I mean, if we're operating how we've been operating, we would have a quorum at that meeting, which we cannot meet by Tuesday.
Right. I would be fine with Tuesday. I don't know. We don't have a hearing for the other one, which seems like a larger, more complicated issue potentially. So maybe we should think about it for the other one. But I think for Tuesday, I would be fine with the hearing officer just reporting back to us.
I second Steve's motion.
Thank you. Any more discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Okay. Next one, revised Diligent IAL regulations.
Okay. So, apologies.
Your time to shine.
Well, I'm always shiny, sir. Bye, shiny. Okay. I printed out only three copies of each of these because you guys know our printing woes. So I didn't want to hand them out before we got to this, just because I didn't want it to be confusing. So this side of the table, you are getting the version with all of the changes. So if it's underlined, we added it from the original. If it's struck, then we removed it after hearing comments. Opposite side of the table, please excuse my reach. You are getting a totally clean copy, so this is what it will look like if it's approved as is, and if I may move whoever's phone this is. I have three copies of the public comments that we received, and apologize, it's printed very small. The long and short of the first set of comments that we received, let me read it off my phone real quick, was really just looking for some clarification. So, in the initial document, we said that the whatever filter or filtration system that you use needed to be NSF, needed to meet NSF 53 or 401 standards. That originally was interpreted very narrowly. Upon further review of some additional accreditation bodies, we widened that and said, hey, these guys test to the same level as NSF, we should be able to widen that. So that goes to the first comment and also the last of the DWA comments. The first comment was from a community member asking for clarification on that. So that ultimately resulted in more people being able to be refunded if they had purchased filtration systems or filters for their homes. So bonus there. The rest of the comments from GWA, you guys have all been emailed these, by the way, all three of these documents, so you can read them at your leisure. But a lot of the other comments were related to just looking for clarification on
what's the initial monitoring period? When do we go, when can we request reduced monitoring? When do we go back into increased monitoring? So we think we clarified that. Our goal, to make it brief for all of you, was to align this with the other synthetic organic contaminants, the SOCs, mm-hmm. because this is a pesticide that behaves just like chlordane, which is regulated. So we wanted to treat it essentially as it was in the same class because it is. So we updated wording to match the SOCs. We updated wording to be more consistent with approved EPA language. And that basically is the gist of the rest of the comments from GWA. I apologize for not having had a PowerPoint to walk you through it. I thought I had made it already, and I had lied to myself. I did not make it already. Yeah, so that's just clarification.
See the red line.
Oh, I already,
yeah, so updates in language, some clarification, and again, I think the biggest takeaway is that we were able to widen the scope of what filters could be reimbursed just by verifying the third-party accreditation bodies. And so where we are right now, we felt that the changes that we made were substantive, so we lean towards being more conservative and putting it back out for public comment a second time. It officially opens for public comment tomorrow morning. It'll be out for 2 weeks because of the 10GCA Chapter 53, I think Section 51113 says if you have an interim action level, you modify it. It's got to be out for 2 weeks, and the notice has to be 7 days prior to the public hearing. So Kristen has volunteered to read a script that I promised to write her for the public hearing on March 6th. Notice will be out in the PDN and then also on the public notices portal starting tomorrow morning. A second notice will go Friday the 27th. The next Friday we'll have the hearing. Hopefully, based on the work that we did here, we shouldn't receive substantive comments. We're hopeful that we've done the proper revisions. And then if that's the case, we should have a resolution and the final copy that you'll see is the clean version that your side of the table got in hard copy, but you all have an email. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will be the final version. And then we'll bring that to you for vote in the March board meeting. I will be off island, but I think that with all of the time that you have with the documents now, the review of the public comments, and then pending whatever we get on the public hearing, I think that will be okay. I now have all the documents prepped for you guys before I leave off island on the 4th of March. So I'll send them to Arlene, so you'll have, should have ample time with them before we leave. So pending your questions, I think that covers the update. Kristen, did I miss anything? Peter, miss anything?
How long does it take Deldrin to break down? Because I was under the assumption it was rather quick.
Well, actually, it's a very persistent chemical. So once it sticks to the soil, it likes to stay there. There are varying sets of data. I have seen anything like the expected half-life in about like 20 degrees Celsius is 5 years. But in tropical conditions, like 75 Fahrenheit, so probably 30, 35 Celsius, is that it should break down in as little as a month. Obviously, the concentrations are very high, and they're very consistent over many years of data that I have found so far. So we're afraid that there's a point source, but also without being disrupted, if it's just moving through the waterway and it's not breaking down in contact as it moves through the soil or is filtered or passed through humans, which it should be metabolized in. We think there's a point source. It might be a large point source. We don't know. Mm-hmm. That's part of the investigation work that we're doing. But one of the indicators that concerns us is the fact that the concentrations have stayed so consistent. So in soil, you know, if you have high concentrations in soil somewhere and that soil has not been disrupted for many years, and then you disrupt it, right, you would see an increase. And it might be that, you know, as different soils are disrupted, we're seeing that fairly consistent. It's not super water soluble. It doesn't really love to be in the water. So even in the water column, usually what we see is it will settle out. We also see it in marine water. So there is some work, and I've kind of had some conversations with WERI to maybe have a graduate level project to see what the breakdown times would look like here on island. But that there's what we see existing in the soils and groundwater from the data that we have is indicating that it's not breaking down, or that there is a source that's keeping those consistent.
What's your gut?
My gut says there's a point source somewhere. I would have expected further breakdown after 40 years of non-use. So either it was still being used much later than it was allowed, or there's a point source somewhere. That's what I think. I won't add any more conjecture since we're on the record, but we can have a chat later. Because I'm not a super big fan of conjecture. I like data. Solid data, sir.
I like a conspiracy.
Well, I'm not allowed to talk conspiracy theories when I'm officially on the record, off the record.
No, but thank you for that. And I mean, it's good to know. I mean, we've got to, so I think the public appreciate, you know, your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly that's consistent with what I provided to the legislature also. So you're more than welcome to go look at the 4.5 hours of testimony that
okay,
I provided to the legislature, if you'd like.
How'd you know what I was doing after this?
Also, if you'd like to see a molecular model, there's one on my desk down the other building.
So no more, what does your gut tell you?
What's that?
So no more, what did your gut tell you?
Yeah, stop it.
That'll get us in trouble.
Maybe the conspiracy theories is trying to get me in trouble.
How come this one's 14 days? Aren't sometimes it's 45 days?
Yeah, it depends on the regulation that it's tied to.
Okay.
And so this is tied to 10 GCA. This isn't tied to a federal regulation. This is tied to our regulation.
Okay. So it's going out for public comment now, and then you're going to receive comments. Hopefully none, but maybe you'll get some.
Correct.
And you'll have to respond to those.
Yes, sir.
Before we discuss at the board level.
Correct.
Okay. Next one on the agenda, any new notices of violations in the past since last reported?
No, none.
Wait, hold on. Because our last meeting was 22nd?
Yes.
So, maybe, okay, never mind. I guess
it's there already.
It's there already.
Yeah.
We discussed it last meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Anyone from the public? Wanna? Hearing none. Our next meeting will be scheduled third Thursday of March, which is the 19th.
San Jose. St. Joseph's Day.
St. Joseph's Day.
You won't be here.
My mother's birthday, that's why.
Oh, it's okay. Glad to be here.
Yeah,
my friend. Glad we'll be here.
Yes.
It's in the wrong.
Yeah, right. I'll still be off island, so. The day after St. Advil.
That's the San Jose Fiesta, you know?
Yeah. Every year we make special pastries in Italian. They call it San Giuseppe. Special ricotta for the people. That time of year. And that's what my mother has for her birthday cake.
Nice.
At 96 this year.
Wow.
Oh, enjoying your
Yeah, we make stroopwafel.
I was looking at that.
We're in the hospital. They said, is this your mother? I said, my mother. I said, that's my grandmother. Stop being a jerk. I said, I can't, Mom.
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much, everybody.